Yeah, no, no, you did fine. You got stuff on your hands. It's 9:15 on July 29th, and I'm on the line with Anton Hunter of formerly Roberts Lake. What are we calling ourselves these days?
I don't know. I have a couple of names in mind. The group is talked about as a whole. We have the Roughnecks RV Coalition, or RV Unit. We haven't decided yet.
Mm-hmm. And how many folks are actually involved in this encampment, which has been both a vehicular and a ground encampment at Roberts Lake, which I don't really know where it is. I've heard it described numerous times. But you've had to move as a consequence of pressure from the city, but been able to secure some kind of accommodation. Is that accurate?
Yeah, well, it wasn't really pressure from the city. At first it began as such, but we protested and got an emergency meeting with the council granted for our calls. And first they were just trying to scatter us to the wind and disband the camp entirely. But I made the argument that, you know, if you're just going to disband our camp at this time during COVID, you need to, you know, give us a spot to actually be located too. So they accommodated our request, and sure enough, you know, we have some better economy.
You're in a better place.
We have better accommodations now, and we lost some. So, you know, when we're here now, we got water, running water, but we're not close to any stores.
Got electrical outlets.
I'm working on that. I'm working on that with another individual across the street that is, I believe, the roof from the law school. He's got involved and took a spearhead to it. His name is Mitch. I forgot his last name. I don't know it off the top of my head. And we're working diligently to try to find a permanent resolution.
Gotcha.
So we're working on basically we're going to set up something permanent with the city.
Would you say, Anton, that this happened as a consequence of a potential legal threat? Did you have any kind of legal guns, or was it, you know, sweet?
Yeah, Jess Kant, she's with the CRLA, and I called her to our co-host. She was more than happy to help, and we put a little legal pressure on the back of Seaside City's neck, to try to get something to move forward to accommodate us during COVID-19. We thought that, they weren't really following the CDC guidelines, but I have it on recording that, that they feel like they do. So, you know, it's up for argument. So, you know, we just took legal proceedings and, you know, put some pressure on them.
And CRLA is the California Rural Legal Assistance?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. How long have you yourself been involved in this particular struggle?
The people of Roberts Lake actually came to me for leadership. So I took the initiative when I was called upon to do that. I've been doing it ever since. So I thought about, say, about 4 or 5 months now.
How long have you been outside?
What do you mean?
Are you outside or are you indoors yourself?
I've been outside, homeless, for about a year and a half now.
Mm-hmm.
1 or 2 years.
And, I mean, you probably have, you know, you're aware of the Lapis Road, situation where people were driven away from there. And have you, because of the COVID, of course, you've got more, I think, basis for standing your ground. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No.
Are many people from Lapis Road as part of your group?
I have some people from Lapis Road actually here in my group, in the camp. And their insight has been valuable. So they learned a lot from their mistakes from Lapis. So we've corrected those here. You know, we have a couple of walls that, you know, as a whole camp, we all agreed upon, and, you know, that we're following through. We care about the general feel of our camp. We care about the sanitation of our camp. And we also care about the welfare of our camp and the welfare of everybody here. So, you know, we're doing a lot better job, I think, you know, as a whole than they did at Lapis.
Now, what about what is this new location, and is it available for members of the community to come and contribute their assistance?
It's 2688 Colonel Durham. The physical address, the actual address is Seaside, but it's located in Florida right next to CZUMB dormitory and our college grounds.
Mm-hmm. And are you inviting members of the community to come visit?
Yeah, of course. I'm always, you know, eager to meet new people that want to help. On the cause of homelessness, we're actually taking steps to actually put something in place for, you know, people that are homeless. the city to try to, you know, make something permanent. So I always encourage outside support.
How many folks would you say, Anton, are, you know, currently housed or vehicled there? And how many had to be left behind because they didn't have vehicles or their vehicles? I understand.
No, the only people that had to be left behind were the people in tents. Also, by the city manager, that the tents were, they were no-nos, and that we can't bring people in tents. I still don't see why that would be the case. We have plenty of land out here, so they can actually tent up. So that's something that's going to be actually discussed either behind closed doors or during the city council meeting on the 6th.
In the meantime, are the tent people given assurance they're not going to be moved away? What's your sense of that?
Let's say that one more time.
In other words, tent folks are still out at Roberts Lake, right?
Yeah, we have a couple tent folks that are out in Roberts Lake. It's not too many. It's about, I want to say, about 3 to 4 tents that are out there.
And was that a reduction from the number that were there when you were all there, or is that the same number? In other words, did you lose some folks who thought, uh-oh, without those vehicles around, we're not going to be protected, and they kind of took off in different directions into the bushes? Or, you know, is it the same number there that were there when you were there with your vehicles?
No, it's the same number there. We did have a couple of new people that entered. We actually had a couple of people that left. For instance, I had a gentleman that is a veteran. We took care of him and actually got him a hotel during these hard times. So I've had a couple people, you know, leave for the better because they actually found housing. So I'm happy to say that.
Are people who want to be COVID-19 tested at either the encampment you're at now and whatever we're calling it, and those left behind, and also your encampment before, do they get tests if they want them, or is it difficult to do?
No, I've had a couple people get tested for COVID-19 because of other medical conditions that they may have. I actually had one of my advisors. He's been tested just because he wants to be tested for COVID. I'm happy to say that I have zero infection in my camp, thank God. You know, we're fortunate to actually have that. I was told that we're going to have CHOMP, the local hospital around here, actually come out once a week and give medical aid to anybody that needs it here at the camp. So I'm pretty sure COVID testing is going to be a part of that.
Was this done before when you were at Roberts Lake?
No, it was not. This is something new that they want to actually implement within the camp. Mm-hmm. And when I say they, I mean the city.
How about assistance for vehicles who are in disrepair and also as a waste disposal for folks in their vehicles?
Okay, so the waste disposal right now is being handled by a company called the Clean Brothers. They have been dumping and filling my RVs during COVID. I'm glad for their help. I would suggest if anybody needs any kind of services in the kind of sanitation, you hire them. The rates are pretty cheap, and they're pretty caring. They are essential to my camp and making it run fluently without any hiccups or any accidents. So they have been facilitating that, and my porta potties and my hand washing station. But we do have an additional two porta potties that are handicapped porta potties, and we have additional two hand washing stations from the city that have been placed here.
Showers?
We're going to get showers within, I believe, this week or the next. Next being the stretch of it. We've had city workers. They're looking for central drains, not storm drains, but drains that they can actually compensate with the showers. I guess they're going to be building some or bringing some on site fairly soon.
How far are you from? Because I think this was a concern of yours before, that this move was, you know, kind of putting you in a more isolated position, harder for folks to get to essential services. Is that still a concern?
We're my camp. I'm happy to say that we all support one another here. Intuitively, I cannot stress that enough. I love my camp because we really do help one another here. So if anybody does need a ride or needs some goods from a store, we either pick them up or bring it up at the store, or bring them to the store. So we all help one another here. But we also had discussions about a shuttle service being presented here for the camp to get people back and forth from the city. The closest store for civilians is about 2 miles away. Thank God we do have people here on site that are veterans and can access the commissary
And that contrasts with the fact that you were just right across the road previously from stores, right?
Yeah, it is a big jump. You know, being literally a walking distance around the corner from a gas station, and now, you know, the closest one for civilians is 2 miles away, if that.
So, have you had much contact with other camps, and do you have a sense of how many people who are outside and who haven't got access to, or in their vehicles, are in a position of vulnerability, who aren't getting the services you guys are getting?
Yeah, I'm aware of a couple of other camps and other individuals that are outside. To be quite frank, I've reached out with them, and under the Coalition for Homeless Services Help, I've been able to basically give them an assessment and get all their information via iPad, and actually return that back to the Coalition for Homeless Services so we can actually do something for the individuals that are outside the matter part of our camp. So we are working pretty hard to actually try to help other individuals that matter part of our camp.
Now, by we, do you mean, you know, your camp, or do you mean, I don't know, government folks that have forced you to move but have provided these facilities?
So, I mean by, when I say we, I mean me and my colleagues and other peers that have been actually coming together to make this work and to do something greater in our community when it comes to the homeless and actually finding something more permanent, concrete, and something that's actually going to have a systemic change for the homeless here in our city. I mean the Coalition of Homeless Services, I mean Eric Johnson and the LOCC. I mean, I have tons of people that have been helping out, and we have reached out to the governor regarding what's been going on here in Seaside. We haven't seen any correspondences or any. Or any feedback from him as of yet. We just sent out that correspondence, I believe, 3 to 4 days ago. But to be quite frank, I gotta say, I mean, you know, we've done this in an exceptional, I'm sorry, give me 1 second.
No, take your time, man.
I'll be out there in a second, John. Mm-hmm. We've done this in a fashion, in a very fast pace. You know, getting all this together. You know, even the move from Robert's Lake to here was only a 4-hour process. You know, it is one of the quickest camp relocations for homeless individuals that the Monterey County has ever seen. Period. Bottom line. So, I mean, you know, everything is pretty going smoothly. There hasn't been too much hiccups ever since that. You know, we talked to the city and actually, you know. Basically, you know, got this actually started in Fort Ord. You know, it's just running pretty smoothly, I can say.
This is being done, though, under pressure from the city, right?
Yes, it has been done under pressure from the city. That is correct, though. Mm-hmm. That is correct. I still do feel that they should have waited a little while longer until the COVID numbers actually went down. But out of all fairness, it is more isolated location, so we don't have to endure, you know, random people that want to enter the lake from the city coming in and out of our camp. So we do have that. We have the safety of not having to encounter other people as much.
So you if you were given the choice of moving back, you wouldn't do it.
It's hard to say. I mean, I love my city, and I think that, you know, the locale is better when it comes to being able to access stores. But being COVID safe, I would actually say here would be a better locale.
What's the safety situation for the majority of homeless people in the county, in Monterey County? Well, let's not count Salinas. That's sort of over the hill, so to speak. But let's say Carmel, Pacific Grove, Seaside, Marina, Monterey. Would you say that the percentage of people that you are, your group is 5%, 2%, 50%?
Are you talking about for the general overall homeless individuals?
Yeah.
I would say it's probably 15% at best.
And what do you think is the condition of the other 85%?
Unfortunately, I've had reports from individuals this morning and last night that we do have some individuals that don't have anything at all, no blankets, no nothing. We have people that were part of our camp that couldn't make it with us that are literally, it's sad to say that they're literally sleeping in our home people at parking lot. And it crushes me to say that, you know, and I'm going to do what I can to help these individuals and give them the supplies and that they need to, you know, try to, you know, at least get a tent up or, you know, get blankets to stay warm or help them in any fashion, way, or form. If I had
And that was going to be my next question, Anton. Has Project Room Key and House Key, have those funds actually been spent, or are they sitting in a bank account somewhere?
So from what I'm understanding and reports from the coalition have been that Project Room Key has been implemented to the simple fact that there is no more rooms, period, that can actually be filled up for Project Room Key. It is totally filled up. So we haven't, I know that's been some of the obstacles that we've had to overcome. It's been finding hotels that would actually, you know, be okay with reusing Project Room Key. Some of the hotel personnel or managers, they have they're really afraid of what the homeless may bring if they would allow them to participate in Project Home Key. Project Room Key. I know they got a Project Home Key that has been now implemented to help some of the homeless, and it's in a different, you know, it's not the same as a room key.
I guess, you know, I mean, I had this conversation a few minutes before with Brent Adams, who's a local activist here. You may have heard of Brent. He does a thing called the River Bridge Services, where he's been providing storage space for homeless folks and various other facilities. He isn't funded at all by the city. The city doesn't like him. He's a very independent fellow. I was asking him, I was pointing out that, you know, there are plenty of motels in Santa Cruz, for example, that are vacant, regardless of the fact that, you know, maybe they haven't been bought by the city or so forth. But the city is directing people in homes and businesses to shut down. It seems to me in emergency situations, they can also engage in taking over these motels for the health of the community. Has there been any discussion of that in Monterey?
No, I know that there's been talks about it, but nothing actually, you know, concrete has actually happened, per se. I think I know what you're getting at. And to be quite frank, I agree. The cities need to do more and be more active when it comes to helping out the homeless. I did the number for Seaside. And Seaside, to be honest with you, you know, it almost seems as if they want the general populace to believe that they're actually doing a systemic change for the homeless. I did the numbers for the budget, okay? Last year, for instance, they spent almost no money or allocated no money or funds to the homeless, period, bottom line. And then the little money that they did was a drop in the bucket for, like, say, the homeless shelter that they built was only $33,000, and that's only $1 per citizen that lives in Seaside, when the project cost a total of $2,158,650-something-odd, okay? Now, they like to take credibility for, oh, well, look, see, we actually built this, we're helping out the homeless, and you guys actually think value, you guys never really done anything, you know what I mean? So I think that a full transparency from the city of actually what they do and how they help the homeless doesn't need to be dressed up with fancy words that to confuse the populace. I think that, to be honest with you, they have a very serious, direct approach that, like for instance, I asked the city council multiple times, and even the chief of police, you can actually see this on YouTube, Paul's the Calls Part 2, I believe. Under Wes White actually uploaded this video of us actually fighting for Robert Flake, okay? And I asked even the chief of police this question. Can you name a homeless individual that you know in the city of Seaside, first and last name that you know at all? Like, can you name one? No, he cannot, nor can the rest of the council of Seaside, okay? That is a very big concern for me because it just lets me know how uninvolved you are with the homeless.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So I'm off to a meeting of a group called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and I will pass on some of your thoughts, Anton, to the group. Is there anything you want to bring up that you have some organizations that I think, because you've had a coalition of groups, and I don't so much mean government groups, but maybe they have been involved, but I think it's groups outside the government. I don't know, Cop Watch, Black Lives Matter, things like that, which have actually produced the pressure that may have, along with the California Rural Legal Assistance, of course, which is nice,
right,
to actually get these people from abandoning, simply dispersing everybody all over the place, which is their standard.
Right. I would like to thank Community Before Cops and Paul the Call of Amber at BLM of Black Lives Matter for their support. And they supported us with hygienics. They supported us with food. They supported us with diapers and formulas. I really do appreciate them stepping up and helping my people out in this difficult time that we're having right now. Big shout out to them. Thank you very much. made a real impact without some of their numbers. Big shout out to Gabriella. Shout out to I want to pronounce her name right. It's I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And Riley and a couple of the other names that I haven't mentioned. I apologize. Thank you for all you guys. I really appreciate everything, Miriam Smith. Thank you. And to be quite frank, I really do help those. I'm telling you, brother, man. I don't know if I would have got this far without them. They really helped us in our time of need. You're absolutely right. I mean, we have other organizations around here that have really been helping out. I mentioned a few, and I just want to thank all of them.
Is there a chance that any of these organizations will continue? Or is the wave of protest against police violence and the demand for police defunding fading in Monterey, as it seems to be to some extent in Santa Cruz? But if it isn't, is there a chance that the larger population, which is, of course, 85% of the homeless population, which is not getting any of these services or getting, should we say, less than, and probably getting more harassment than you are, and also the tenants who are facing evictions in the next few weeks. Is there a chance of any kind of a coalition, or are people pretty much, you know?
I believe there's a big chance. I know that they have a homeless union that's actually formed. Anthony Prince, I believe the man's name is, that was invited to as an officer. They have so many homeless encampments in San Diego, Sacramento, Santa Cruz,
Marysville, and so forth. Yeah,
yeah, and then, you know, we all get on the phone and then we all talk about what's going on in our camps, and we, you know, it seems like we're all coming together. So to answer your question, absolutely, I believe the number is 48%. There's going to be a 48% increase in homelessness once COVID is over, and I totally believe in those numbers. Just for instance, I go down to PG by Lighthouse, and literally from 1st to 12th Street, you literally see. For rent, for sale, around, just continuously all the way through. And it is really disturbing. So absolutely, I believe that there's gonna be something big that develops sooner or later. You know, and I made predictions about COVID and what was gonna happen. I knew they were gonna probably implement another shutdown, they're gonna open too early, and I totally feel that organization or union or some big group, we're all going to form together and make a serious impact when it comes to homelessness and homeless needs.
Well, Anton, thank you for, you know, taking time. I know you were trying to, you know, you're doing other things at the same time. So
yeah.
Let me turn back to that, what you need to do, and also give yourself a little break. And you have my number if you want to reach me, if you have any updates. It's 423-HUFF here in area code 831. And get in touch if you want.
Yeah, for sure. I'll let you know if anything major develops.
All right. I appreciate it, man.
No problem, man. Anytime, man.
All right. I may call you back.
All right, brother. Thank you.
You take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.